Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here with Paul Keita, who's food and nutrition editor at Men's Health. He's also the founder of menshealth.com's popular food and cooking blog, Guy Gourmet. In 2013, he co-wrote Guy Gourmet, Great Chef's Amazing Meals for a Lean and Healthy Body. And he's just on the verge of publishing his second cookbook, A Man, A Pan, A Plan. Paul, welcome to The Inside Dish.
No, it's great to be on. Thank you.
So how does one go from being a writer and editor at Men's Health to being a cookbook author?
It's a great question. I have to go back to sort of how I was raised, and that was through a mom who was an excellent cook but didn't really want me in the kitchen. I'm sure there are probably listeners out there that know what I'm talking about. My mom's kitchen time was her time, and then family time was around the dinner table. And then my dad is an incredible eater. He is a cyclist. He's a runner, so he has this appetite. So I grew up with the appetite, and then when I went to school, I didn't have the cooking portion because my mom never taught it to me. So here I was in college sort of needing a way to fuel my appetite that was similar to my mom's form of cooking. The dining hall was not cutting it. So I picked up the Culinary Institute of America's cookbook and just started cooking my way through it. I started making beef stock in my tiny apartment complex in Ohio University. And my roommates weren't necessarily excited about the smell of roasting cow bones in the oven, but I was.
Well, so I guess it's fair to say you have no formal culinary training other than what you've picked up yourself. Do you think, for what you're doing, is that an advantage or disadvantage?
It's an interesting question. I believe that I would have gone to culinary school if it weren't so expensive. It's a whole nother tuition payment. So how I came about Men's Health, I had an internship there that rolled into a job, and I had been cooking all along. This was just a pursuit that I had. And when I came to Men's Health, and a lot of people think of Men's Health magazine as, you know, how to get six-pack abs. Well, cooking is a large part of what we do. I believe that the single best thing that you can do for better health right now is to learn how to cook. And we extol the virtues of that in the pages of the magazine. But one of the great things about Men's Health is it gave me access to all these great chefs, nationally renowned chefs, Thomas Keller, Eric Repair, and people that I sort of studied under their wing through their recipes. Men's Health, which is owned by Rodale, has its own test kitchen, so I'm able to spend a lot of time there. In short, it's an awesome job.
Well, it sounds like having access to the chefs inspires you, gives you ideas, and I think in the same way, as I look through A Man, A Pan, A Plan, it looks like you have a balance between inspiration and instruction. Is that kind of what you're looking to accomplish with the book?
Yeah, the first cookbook, Guy Gourmet, was really informed by the chefs who worked with the magazine. And, you know, they brought me up. I sort of cut my teeth. I cooked a lot. And this new book, A Man, A Pan, A Plan, these are 100 recipes that I developed myself in my own home kitchen. And, you know, unlike chef recipes, these recipes are very straightforward. This book is a smaller book. It's a smaller trim size. And it's an inexpensive cookbook. It's $16. It's supposed to be designed for the newbie to intermediate home cook who's looking to either introduce healthy, delicious meals into their lives or, you know, step up their cooking game a little bit.
Well, where do you find inspiration for some of the recipes if you're developing them yourself and really don't have that that formal culinary background?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. Two ways that I approached recipes in this cookbook, and it's important to sort of focus on the pan portion of the title. All of these recipes you can cook using one pan. And I won't lie to you, some of the recipes require two pans, but this is streamlined, non-fussy cooking. A lot of it was just, I love lasagna. How can I make lasagna in a pan? And I would do a couple rounds of testing, and then eventually, we would adapt the recipe for the pan. And then the other thing was just, this is how I cook. And I think this is how a lot of people in America cook. They come home from a hard day of work. They have a couple ingredients in the refrigerator. What can I throw together? And that's how I got one of the ideas for one of the recipes that's featured on the cover of the book, which is four chili pork chops with grilled pineapple. It's, you know, basically five ingredients. You have a pork chop, some pineapple rings, some mint, some salt and pepper. And that's it. And that was born out of necessity. You know, my wife was hungry. I needed to feed her.
And it's what you had in the refrigerator and in the cupboard.
Yeah. So a lot of the recipes follow a similar framework. You know, there's no fussy ingredients that you have to go out and search for. There's not a lot of, you know, complicated cooking contraptions that are required here. This is just very simple, very basic, very straightforward cooking.
Now, for the recipes that are in the cookbook, certainly, they're things you developed at home. I imagine they go through a round of testing in the kitchen. How many times is something tested before it makes its way into the book, just to make sure it's going to work for the everyday person?
Yeah, I will test all the recipes at least twice myself. And testing sounds like a fun process, but it's not always. There's one recipe that didn't make the cut. I'm a big barbecue fan. I'm a Kansas City Barbecue Society certified judge. And I really wanted to learn how to make smoked ribs in a pan. And after three or four tries, Mike, I had to give up.
You were unsuccessful, or you smoked the house out?
A little bit of both. Both, yeah. Unsuccessful in many different ways. But, you know, that was one of the few recipes that didn't make the cut. For a majority of them, because these recipes are so easy, it was hard to screw them up.
Was it difficult to go from just testing them to wanting to refine them a little bit more or fine-tune them, knowing that you'd have to maybe test again?
Yeah, and I think the process is the same for a lot of home cooks. You know, you cook something once and you say, you know, that really could have used something the next time. And I think that's one of the most fun parts about cooking. I know some people out there are probably like, fun and cooking in the same sentence? I don't get it. But that sort of refinement, that sort of detail in adjusting recipes, you know, that's what made my mom's cooking so great. You know, that's what makes my grandmother's cooking so great, is that instead of following recipes, you begin to sort of, you know, you begin to sort of understand the rules of cooking, then you get to play around with them a little bit.
Do you go into that in the cookbook, where there are a couple of recipes, like, for instance, an omelet, where an omelet can be a palette for just about anything you have in the fridge, or same with maybe a simple sandwich where you can put things on top of that? Is that explored in the new cookbook?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because the core of many of these recipes is technique. And if you can master even three basic techniques, I think anybody can become a great home cook. You mentioned the omelet. There's an omelet recipe in the book. One of my favorite recipes in the book is a recipe for cast iron pan pizza. So once you learn how to get this flaky, bubbly dough from throwing a even pre-made pizza dough that you can buy from your local pizza shop or a grocery store, and you throw it into a preheated skillet, you have this great puffed dough. You put whatever toppings you want on top of it, and that becomes a great family favorite weeknight meal that you can change up however you want.
You can put leftover proteins. You can put vegetables. You can make a dessert pizza with fruit, I imagine.
Yeah, there you go. Two recipes in the book. Actually, three. One is for a traditional margarita-style pizza. The other one is for a vegetable pizza that I promise you actually tastes good. This isn't the vegetable pizza from your national chains. And the other one is a New England or New Haven style clam pie.
So not only do you use what's in the fridge, but you can use whatever is in your region. I imagine down south, if you had fried okra left over and some pork butt, you could put that on there too.
That sounds pretty damn
good. Sounds pretty good right now, doesn't it? Let's talk a little bit about your opinion on the practice of cooking in this country. Do you feel that it's becoming a lost skill, or do you think it's due for a resurgence?
Oh, this is interesting. Actually, a survey just came out that found that more Americans would rather eat a home-cooked meal than they would going out to a restaurant. And I was sort of surprised by that. Now, the question wasn't, would they rather cook a home-cooked meal, but would they eat it? And I think it speaks to the idea that those flavors are there, but there's also a sense of comfort that's associated with home cooking. And that's sort of the hidden benefit, I think, to taking control of your diet and cooking for yourself, is that you're also creating family time. You know, these are recipes that you can cook with your family and eat with your family. And that opens up a whole host of additional benefits in your life.
What's your opinion on some of the services like Blue Apron that are coming out, where everything comes portioned, you're able to follow a recipe and put everything together? Do you see them as a shortcut or maybe a gateway to someone who is going to be cooking more themselves?
I think it's a great introduction into cooking. You know, I know that people tend to find going to the supermarket a hassle. I kind of like it, but I'm weird. but I like that sense of exploration and discovery. But those big box kits are great for families who don't have the time to shop. Actually, Men's Health has a partnership with a company called Cheft, where we created meals for them, and they ship it right to your door, and you cook them up. But, you know, there's still something to me about going to the supermarket or the farmer's market, so many great farmer's markets in the Lehigh Valley, seeing what's fresh, bringing them home, and just making a fantastic meal out of very few ingredients because they're so fresh and delicious.
For someone with very little experience in the kitchen who might be listening, what are your recommendations on how to get started cooking and experimenting in the kitchen?
Well, the first thing that you need you only need 4 pans for this, and you only actually really need 3, but I threw in a bonus pan. One, you need a large nonstick pan, 10 or 12 inches, a small nonstick pan when you're cooking for smaller batches, a cast iron skillet, of course, and then if you have the extra $35 to spend, a cast iron grill pan, which gives you a great sort of charred flavor of foods without having to go and fire up the grill. So equipment-wise,
you're looking at $100, yeah, $120 you know, bucks maybe.
You get a good chef's knife and a cutting board and a large bowl, and you get started. I mean, a lot of people think that you need to spend a lot of money, like you got to go to Williams-Sonoma and shell out thousands of dollars for the right equipment. No, cooking is very simple.
Well, in fact, that cast iron pan, a lot of times 10, 12-inch cast iron skillet, you're looking at $35 as something that could last generations.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things I found fascinating in the book is you had a section on cleaning.
Cleaning,
I've never seen that in a cookbook, so talk about that a little bit.
I love doing the dishes, and I know that might horrify some people, but I'm going to stand by it. You know, one of my favorite parts about having dinner with my wife is that we go and we carry the conversation from sitting down to dinner into the kitchen where we do the dishes. And you know, I know some people like to go for a walk after dinner to sort of, you know, let things digest. I do that too, but I also like standing up and hand washing dishes. I think it gives a nice closure to the meal.
That's great. And what are some of your favorite recipes that are in the cookbook or things you go to over and over again?
That's a great question. One of my favorite recipes, and the recipe that I think best showcases what a pan can do in terms of versatility is a recipe for steak and mushrooms with a red wine sauce that has garlicky spinach to it. So kind of a steakhouse dinner at home that will cost you far less money. And it's great because you sear the steak in the pan, you take the steak out to rest, then you deglaze the pan with wine, and that
Which
becomes
means
your...
just pouring the wine in.
Exactly.
Deglaze, that, technical term.
Mm-hmm. That becomes your sauce. And then after the pan is deglazed and you've transported the sauce out into a serving dish, you then cook your mushrooms and your spinach in there. So you only ever dirty up one pan. You could even put the steak and put the sauce on the steak back into the pan and eat it out of the pan if you want to, which I've been known to do.
Well, done and done, right? And we are done here. So, Paul, thank you for joining us here on WDIY and sharing your perspective on cooking and cookbooks.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.